is LBC. From Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Oh, 3 minutes after 12, and here we are again. Comes around gratifyingly regularly, although the gap between Thursdays and Thursdays does feel odd still because of the parameters of lockdown, doesn't it? Everything is sort of a little bit upside down at the moment. So these little, what would you call them, these rocks of regularity become all the more reassuring and secure. And here we are, washing up against the rocks of regularity that is Mystery Hour, your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. If you've got a little question buzzing away or bubbling away in the back of your mind, whatever it's about, whether it's about something deadly serious or something relatively silly, trivial even, then give me a call on 0345 6060973. And somebody else listening to the programme will almost certainly know the answer. If you are getting the children involved, then by all means, go and get them now. We will not be doing anything inappropriate between now and 1 o'clock. So that's pretty much how it works. Give us a call, 0345 6060973. Ask your question and then sit back, put your feet up. I was going to say smoke a cigar, but I can't do that after urging young people to get involved. And wait for somebody else to ring in with the answer. That you need the same number to do that. And the awards awaiting you are absolutely magnificent. All I'll ask when you ring in is what your qualifications are, to which you can reply, I saw it on telly last night, James. You do not need to have any formal qualifications at all. It's more of a figure of speech than an actual entry requirement. I just need to know where you got that nugget of knowledge from so that I can decide completely arbitrarily and independently whether or not you get a round of applause. In the event of you being supremely qualified to make the contribution that you make, well, magical things can happen. I'll leave you to find out whether or not lightning strikes today. Obviously, you can't look anything up. Obviously, you can't look up any answers to the question that you hear, because that would make a complete mockery of the whole process. And if I suspect even a scintilla of suspicion that you have looked stuff up today, it doesn't matter if you looked it up last year when you were doing your homework, but if I suspect, even if I have even a scintilla of suspicion that you've looked stuff up today, then the full weight of my fury will rain down upon you like fire. Is that okay? I haven't frightened the children, have I? 6 minutes after 12 is the time. 0345 6060973 is the number that you need. Shall we start in Peckham? I think we should. Hassan is there. Hassan, do you have a question or an answer for me?
Afternoon, James. I've got a question for you. My question is...
See, we've gone with the adults then, quite early on this week. We're not. Unless your voice has just broken and I'm doing you a grave disservice. How old are you, Hassan?
Just turned 30.
Just turned 30. All right, you carry on, mate.
Well, my question is, James, how much does it cost to make a £20 note?
I quite like that question. Why do you want to know?
Just to know the truth behind money, the legal tender, to be honest. In my mind, I think it costs a lot less to make a £20 note.
Well, of course it does. Of course it costs a lot less. It's not a conspiracy. It'd be bonkers if it cost £20 to make £20, wouldn't it?
I know. That's what I want to find out, exactly how much less it does cost.
Cool. And the new ones, the plasticky ones as well.
Especially that.
Good man. Thank you very much. How much does it cost to make a £20 note? 7 minutes after 12 is the time. Paul is in Cape Town. Paul, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's a question, please.
Carry on.
You know, in old movies, and cowboy movies come to mind, men would tip their hats, like a slight lift as a way of acknowledging someone. I'm also thinking particularly like a lady. And my question is, like, I'd love to know why the tipping of the hat, and the second question is, but when and why did this phase out?
Well, when they stopped wearing cowboy hats.
Well, not just in cowboy hats, the old movies. You know, they used to walk in, those old black and white movies, and the guy used to lift the hat.
Don't take this the wrong way, but I was much better with the children. I say that. I'm glad you laughed. I let the pause hang there just in case I caused you grave offence. I'm glad that we got a little chuckle at the end. I'm only teasing you. But so, I mean, you know where it came from. It came from tipping your hat.
Explain.
Well, do you mean why was tipping your hat a sign of courtesy?
Yeah, it was just those old movies that you see people. The guy came in, I think it sort of stopped around the 50s, but a guy would walk in and just kind of like lift their hat to acknowledge someone. I just always wondered, where did that come from?
So why is lifting a hat a sign of respect or a sign or a, oh, okay, yes. So and therefore the existence of hats is irrelevant to your question. So a sort of form of salute.
Yes.
I wonder if it's got something to do with bare heads in a church or something like that. But the short answer is I don't know. Why is doffing your cap or lifting your hat a sign of deference or, in the context that you describe, simple respect? 8 minutes after 12 is the time. Thank you, Paul. How much does it cost to make a £20 note? And when did tipping the hat become a mark of... I prefer the respect to the deference, but they're going to be intrinsically linked, aren't they? I think that goes without saying. 9 minutes after 12 is the time. Amy is in Abbey Wood. Amy, question or answer?
A question.
Carry on, Amy.
What's a parallel universe?
A parallel universe?
Yeah.
It's. Can you use it in a sentence, Amy?
Like, what is like a parallel universe? Like, what is it?
As in, you've heard the phrase, and you don't. Usually when people use the phrase a parallel universe, they're sort of describing a world that doesn't exist but would exist if things had gone differently in the past. So, for example, what's your favorite name apart from Amy?
I think maybe Sophia.
Sophia, that's a beautiful name. And imagine if your mum and dad had called you Sophia instead of calling you Amy.
And that was weird.
Yeah, but there is now a parallel universe in your brain where most things are still the same, except you're called Sophia. That would be a parallel universe. It's something in your own imagination that is a place where things are slightly different or very different from how they are in reality.
Yeah.
Does that work as an answer for you?
Yeah.
Are you sure? Because you don't have to be polite.
I don't really know. I thought a parallel universe was like another universe.
No.
That's what I thought.
No. Well, I mean, in terms of kind of, it wouldn't even be astronomy, would it? But in terms of physics, there may be a more clever answer. So I will leave your question on the board. But in terms of where that phrase is most used, I think I've answered it. But I sense you're hoping for something a little bit more clever sounding, aren't you, Amy?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. We got there in the end. I'll leave it on the board in that case. I won't be taking any round of applause. How old are you, Amy?
10 years old.
What an amazing question. When did you start wondering about parallel universes?
Just like right now.
But there you go. So not in a parallel universe. 11 minutes after 12 is the time. Thank you, Amy. Christoph is in Wembley Park. Christoph, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on, Christoph.
Where did the 5-day working week come from?
That actually sounds like a question you should know the answer to, doesn't it? Like you're testing me, but you're not.
Seriously, I'm not.
No, I know you're not.
I actually was planning to really ruin your career by phoning during general election time, and because there was the Labour Party were thinking about a 4-day working week, if you remember.
Why would that have ruined my career?
Because you aren't allowed to discuss election.
I fell into that trap once. Yes, no, you're absolutely right. 5-day week, I don't know, because, of course, not that long ago, people had no days off at all, did they? Particularly people in domestic service.
Yes, and, you know, the Judeo-Christian tradition only has one rest day.
Yeah, you have your Sabbath day off, your day of rest. And well, I like that. I mean, post-45, do you think, or pre-45?
I would have thought it'd be pre-45.
Downton Abbey, but you mean like that?
Weekends, remember, you know, you get things called weekends, and they've, as far as I know, they've always been 2 days long.
Yes. Yes, no, I mean, yes, no, he says, which is always a good example of confusion. I shall try and find out for you, Christoph. I'm a little bit embarrassed that I don't know the answer to that. That's why I said it sounded like a question that you'd test me with, because I just thought that would be something I'd have at my fingertips, so to speak, but I don't. 12 minutes after 12 is the time. 0345 60 60 973. Jack's in Golders Green. Jack, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on, Jack.
Why is it that mobile phones, you have to dial the number, then press the call key, whereas in landlines, you press the call key and you have like a, you know, a ringtone, and then you dial the number.
For my younger listeners, could you explain what a landline is, please, Jack?
A home phone.
A home phone? Go on, what's that then?
Yeah, you know, one of the connected to a base, connected to the wall, I don't know.
No, I don't think my kids would know what you were talking about.
Oh.
But a phone that has wires coming out of it, plugged into the wall, you say?
Like a base, you know.
I'll leave it up there in case anybody does know. And why? Well, because when you pick up the phone, you open the line on a landline.
Right.
So the line is open. So you put in the number and it dials.
But why couldn't you do that on a mobile as well?
You probably could if you wanted to. I mean, I wouldn't know how, but I imagine you could have an open line as soon as you press a button, the dial tone. But I'll get someone who knows what they're talking about to answer your question. It's coming up to 12:15. It's the least I can do in the circumstances. What's the difference between a landline and a mobile when it comes to that pressing send, as it were, pressing dial? Although, actually, no, Jack, on mine, mate, I've got a cordless phone for my home phone. And that is the same as the mobile.
Right, yeah. It doesn't have to be the one plugged in. You know,
press send on that one, or you press green and it opens up.
Green, and
it can open up the line, so you can do it both ways around, and you can't do that on a mobile, and it would be quite interesting now to find out why. When did the five-day working week become normal, as it were, presumably through legislation? What's a parallel universe in the kind of scientific sense, perhaps? Where did the tradition of tipping your hat, particularly from a gentleman to a lady, come from? And how much does it cost to make a £20 note? It's 12:15.
LBC Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
17 minutes after 12 is the time. A few questions to get through. It's sort of a fight back from the grown-ups today. I'm not sure I approve of it, to be honest with you, but we are where we are. We can only work with what we have. If you are a younger listener, then you are especially welcome to join in during Mystery Hour, although we are all sort of lurching slowly and blindly towards some sort of return to normality. And Mystery Hour is no different. Christian is in Norwich. Christian, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, mate.
So when I play with my 18-month-old son, so banging things, for example,
yes,
if he's banging the object or the toy, he doesn't blink. But when I bang the object or toy, he blinks.
Yes.
So I guess my question is kind of, why do we blink when we hear a loud sound unless we're the ones making the loud sound?
I wonder whether it's the same answer as the age-old, the hardy perennial of Mystery Hour, which is why you can't tickle yourself.
Because well, he actually can tickle himself. I know he's 18 months old, but he tickles himself with a toothbrush. It's hilarious.
That is quite funny, actually. But as he gets older, then the knowledge of what is coming will presumably reduce the likelihood of a reflex reaction. So the fact that he knows there's going to be a bang exactly when it happens means he doesn't blink, whereas when you do it, even if he can see the drumstick heading towards the drum, there's still an element of surprise involved, no?
Let me reframe the question. I'm in a group of people and clap my hands loudly, then others will blink, but I won't.
Yeah, because you know it's coming.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I think I am. It's the same as why you can't tickle yourself, isn't it, when you think about it? Because subconsciously, your brain is telling your nerve endings what is happening. And it can only be done subconsciously by the person who is doing it. So even if I'm watching you do it, I still might blink when you clap your hands, because I can't know it. It can't be a message sent from my brain to my nerve endings. It can only be a message that stays in my brain. He's about to clap. Oh, God, he's clapped. I've blinked. But I mean, I like that answer a lot. And I think if I was feeling cockier than I am today, I'd give myself a round of applause for that, Christian. But I'm not going to.
Have you had a round of applause yet today? You haven't, have you?
Let me check with my crack team of operatives. Keith, have I had a round of applause yet? No, I haven't. I'm not going to take one for this, but we shall wait. We shall wait and see. Oh, that sounds lovely. I mean, does he actually start chuckling and giggling when he tickles himself with a toothbrush?
Oh, it's hilarious.
It's beautiful.
All the beard as well. That tends to drive him a bit wild. He'll rub his chest on the beard.
Well, not just the beard. If you do it on the top of your head as well. I've never met a baby who doesn't start laughing if you scratch their tummy with the top of your head. It's obviously a slightly odd thing to do uninvited, so I'd urge you not to do anything like that. But it must be a similar thing with your beard. It just makes them giggle their little heads off. And is there any more beautiful sound in the world than the sound of a laughing baby? Christian, thank you. 20 minutes after 12 is the time. Kike is in Flixton in Suffolk. Kike, question or answer?
Who was the first teacher?
I should know this. No, it's not there. I mean, you mean right back in the day, who was the first teacher?
Yeah.
Do you know what the problem with that question is, Kike?
What?
Who taught the teacher?
That's what I want to find out. How did they become the first teacher?
How can they be the very first teacher if nobody taught them? So they must have been discoverers. They must have discovered stuff by themselves and then taught what they discovered to other people, don't you think?
Yeah.
I like it. How old are you, Kike?
8 years
old. What a brilliant question. Who was the first teacher? And if you know the answer to that, then you know what to do. I've got a sneaking suspicion we had that at the beginning of lockdown during Children's Mystery Hour. Because I started waxing lyrical about probably Socrates or Aristotle. I think it went further back than that. So we shall try and get an answer for Kike, even if it kills us. 0345 606 0973. Why do we blink when someone else claps, but not when we clap, even if we can see the clap coming? Who was the first teacher? And why don't mobile phones work like landlines do, if you see what I mean? Ada is in York. Ada, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Ada.
So, who decided that the fork would be in the left hand and the knife would be in the right? Because I do it the other way round.
Do you?
And my mum tells me that it's wrong.
Well, and what do you say when your mum tells you that it's wrong?
I say it's right.
Why don't you say, you should say something like, convention is so bourgeois, mother. Please, try to be a little bit more imaginative. Do you think that would work?
Yeah.
Or you could say, what are rules anyway? Or words to that effect. Are you left-handed?
No, I'm not.
Really? You just prefer swapping them around again? I think it's because the knife... Can I have a go at answering this, Ada, or will you get really bored with me showing off?
No, I'm fine with it.
Good. I think back in the day, there were no forks. There was only a knife. And what you would do is you would cut a bit off with the knife and then you would spear it and put it in your mouth. Do you see what I mean? So you only had a knife?
Yeah.
And because the huge majority of people are right-handed, the knife hand would be the right hand. So, you know, now if you tried it now, chop off a bit of meat. Imagine you've got a nice big chunk of beef or something like that. Or, I don't know, you might be a vegetarian. You've got a very large marrow. And you just cut off a little bit of marrow and then spit and put it. And then someone invented the fork to make life easier. And you just decided, well, I'm going to keep the knife in my right hand and I'm going to put the fork in my left hand. I bet you that's the answer.
Yeah, because my dad did the same hand as me as well. And so did my little brother, I think. But my older sister and my mum do it the right way.
Well, then, you say the right way, but that sounds to me like 3-2, Ada. That is democracy. So what you say to your mum is, you lost, get over it. I'll get you a proper answer, but I think that's probably it. That makes sense, doesn't it? Does it not? I mean, I'm just trying to think, is it... You don't have as much control over your knife with your left hand.
You do.
You don't.
I do. I don't know. I just do.
Really?
I do quite a few things on my left hand and left foot, but then I write with my right hand.
Oh, so you might be ambidextrous. What about your dad? Is your dad ambidextrous as well? A bit ambidextrous?
No.
No? Oh, well, I don't. I mean, you've made me think now. Because do you ever have to lay the table at home?
I don't really lay it. I kind of put the knife and fork in the middle.
You're one of those, are you? You're one of those. The Nando's approach to cutlery, I think it's called, for the younger generation. Well, sometimes I have to lay the table. And I'm a little bit older than you, Ada. I'm 48 and a half. And when I'm laying the table, I sometimes have to do a little mime to remind myself which way round they go. So I actually get my... Do you see what I mean? I imagine I've got... Or not even invisible knives and forks. I think, which way round does it go? And then I actually pick them up and pretend I've got a meal in front of me. And I work out where the knife goes on the right and the fork goes on the left. But you, if you did that, you'd do it wrong.
It's right.
Or right. You lost, get over it. Or you could just pile them all up in the middle of the table and tell everybody else to get lost, which sounds to me like a good plan. But we'll find out for a lovely question. Ada, how old are you?
10
years old with a brilliant question. Who decided? Why? Why is it fork on the left, knife on the right? 0345 60 60 973. Tom's in Kent. Tom, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
I was wondering, how accurate are coordinates? So if I buried some treasure and told you the coordinates...
Yeah.
Like, and you dug a hole on where it, could you be a metre out, a centimetre out? Like, I don't know. I'm just wondering if it might be hard finding treasure.
What's have you got a map or something? Has someone given you a tip off? What are we doing Tom? Are we working on
it'd be great if I could, wouldn't it?
Commission based. So I mean it's degrees, isn't it? It's longitude and latitude, is it?
Yeah, but then because it goes down to the point, doesn't it?
Well, that's what I mean. How big is the gap between one point and another on degrees of longitude and latitude? That's your answer, isn't it? If we can find that out.
Centimetres, though?
We can find that out.
So the next one along, if one longitude along, is that centimetre?
We need to know what a unit of longitude is. Well, how big is a degree? We're probably being really stupid here, Tom, but at least you and I don't realise it yet. So we're having
I'm sure there's a clever person out there.
Exactly.
Know.
We're having this chummy conversation about stuff, and there's geographers and cartographers out there palming their faces like it's going out of fashion at the moment. Who are these clowns on the radio talking about longitude? But it must work, otherwise we'd never find anything, would we?
But longitude isn't a measure of length, is it? Like a centimetre?
I don't know, mate. This is the bit where we start sounding stupid.
How many centimetres go into a longitude?
Yeah, but no, not that. But you'd need to. So look, if it's 54.32, how far away is that from 55.32?
Yeah,
that's what you need to know.
Am I going to have to dig like a 20-metre wide hole to find it?
I don't think so. Otherwise, we'd never find anything, would we?
That's what I'm after.
Yeah, but I mean, that's your anecdotal answer. Is that they must be quite accurate? Otherwise, we'd all be lost.
But how accurate is quite accurate?
Or accurate enough.
Well, if I'm throwing knives at a ball, do you want to be very accurate?
You're not throwing knives at a ball. If it wasn't accurate, we would all be lost. Permanently.
But how accurate? There must be... You've got to have a degree of error.
Yes. Yes, you do.
So that's what I want to know.
Same. So do I now.
Right.
0345 60 60 973. How accurate are coordinates? Or how far apart are two different adjacent but different... Anybody? I preferred it with the children. Ben's in Billingshurst. Ben, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on.
It's the tipping your hat question.
Oh, good, yes. Carry on.
Right, this dates back to medieval times with knights in armour on horseback parleying with each other on a battlefield. And as they approached each other, they would raise their hand and they would lift their visor. And they would effectively tip their hat. And it was a sign of respect. It was a sign of making eye contact with your adversary.
Also saying, let's not stab each other for the next 10 minutes or so.
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely. And there's lots of other similar kind of stuff that comes from that.
But you think it was the lifting of the visor with which it began?
Yes.
I quite like that. Qualifications?
As a child, I was obsessed with all things medieval. I loved knights and chivalry, wanted to be a knight, and read a lot of books about it.
Fair enough. Is there a name for it? Like a fancy word?
The gesture. Not that I know of.
No, same here. I think we probably can go with that, can't we? So you'd lift the visor, and then it becomes a helmet, and then it becomes a hat, and then it becomes the doffing of a cap, and it's a sign of, I mean, originally a sign of respect, and sadly... In some quarters, it's subsequently become a sign of deference, which is very different from respect. You earn respect.
I think you have to tug your forelock as well for that one, James.
Round of applause for Ben.
Thank you.
So you know what someone's going to do now. What's the origin of tugging your forelock? Where does that come from? 12:30 is the time. Thomas Watts is here now with the headlines.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
12:33 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I think we were being a bit dumb. Me and my coordinates friend, but we shall find out just how dumb shortly. Other questions still in need of answers. Who was the first teacher? I know we did that at the beginning. Honestly, I'm getting used to the slight fading of memory that accompanies advancing age, but I would have thought I'd be able to remember something from 3 months ago. But nevertheless, we need to know. Why do we blink when someone else claps, but not when we clap ourselves? Or actually, why does an 18-month-old in Norwich clap? Blink when someone else claps, but not when they clap themselves? I think the answer is going to be quite prosaic on this one, the mobile phone versus the landline. If the mobile phone line was constantly open, you'd be ringing people with your backside all the time, wouldn't you, and things like that. But I'd like you to explain the mechanics to me if you can. When was the five-day week introduced? What is a parallel universe? And how much does it cost to make a £20 note? What was the other one? Yes, and who decided and when was it decided which way around the knife and fork should go? Now, if you're just tuning in and you think you might know the answer to some of these, do ring in, because I think I've answered a couple of them, but my natural modesty prevented me from awarding myself a round of applause. And I know what you're thinking. You're going to think, James, when are you going to get over this natural modesty of yours that holds you back in so many ways? And I just say to you, I don't know, really. I probably tune in tomorrow from 10 and we'll find out whether or not I've managed to finally shrug off the straitjacket of epic modesty that has limited my life in so many ways. Nora is here. I don't know where you're calling me from, Nora, because nobody has written it on the screen. So let me guess. Are you in Outer Mongolia?
No.
Okay. Are you in France?
No.
Are you on the moon?
No.
Where are you?
I'm in Borough Green in Kent.
That's what I... That was my next guess. That was literally my next guess. I was going to go Outer Mongolia, France, the moon, Borough Green in Kent. So, Nora is in Borough Green in Kent. Do you have a question or an answer for me?
A question.
Carry on.
How and when did plants evolve to have poison as a defence instead of physical defences?
Like spikes and thorns and things.
Yeah.
Well, this is actually... I'm going to let myself answer this, but you can decide at the end whether you accept my answer or not. Okay? So, the whole point... Do you know what? How old are you, Nora?
10.
Good grief. Have you noticed, Nora, just quickly between you and me, no one else is listening, do you think the questions that children ask on Mystery Hour are actually much cleverer than the questions that the grown-ups ask?
I'm not as sure.
Oh, well, you're very kind. I think they are. Certainly this one is much cleverer than some of the old rubbish that the adults have been asking this week. But do you know what evolution is?
Yes.
So evolution, oddly, depends upon completely random events. So an organism has existed for so long, for millions of years, that at some point in its past, it's like one seed grew... And it had something, the plant that grew out of that one seed was slightly different from all the other plants that had grown out of the same seed. So it's called a mutation. It's a random mutation, okay? And if that random mutation equips the plant with something that makes it easier for the plant to reproduce... So in this case, it would be survival. The longer a plant survives for, the more seeds the plant can create. The more seeds a plant can create, the more reproduction it has done. Are you following me? You must tell me if you're not, because I get a bit carried away sometimes.
I'm following you,
okay.
Yeah.
So if the random mutation involved something that just tasted horrible, it wouldn't even need to be poison... But if it involved something that tasted horrible... So here is a plant that normally gets eaten by a cow, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it gets to reproduce as many seeds as it can until a cow comes along and eats it. But a random mutation in the same plant means that the leaves now taste really yucky. So the cow comes along, gives it a sniff, maybe even a little bit of a lick, and then goes, oh, no, I'm not eating that plant, and then goes on to the next plant, which comes from the same crop, but which doesn't have the random mutation, and which is still delicious. So the cow eats it. So if you've got two plants, one has been eaten and one has not been eaten, which one is going to reproduce more?
The one which hasn't been eaten.
And that is how it works.
Okay.
Oh, I thought you'd sound... I'm going to be honest with you, Nora, I thought you'd sound a bit more excited than that. Do you buy my answer?
Yeah.
Are you happy with it?
Yeah, I am.
So what you can't do, really, is estimate when it happened. But the reason that it happens and that it sustains is because now the plant with the random mutation, all of the seeds it creates have the same random mutation in them. So soon, mm-hmm. Soon, the plant with the random mutation, if it's the poison or the yuckiness, is going to take over from the plant that hasn't got the random mutation, because the plant without the random mutation keeps getting eaten, and the plant with the random mutation keeps reproducing, until eventually there aren't any plants left without the random mutation, and the only plant you will ever find in that species of plant is the plant that has inherited the random mutation.
Okay.
Well, you still don't sound very excited, Nora. Do you think I deserve a round of applause?
Yeah.
Can I share it with you?
Huh? Okay.
Okay, let's go to round. Thank you, Keith. I feel a sort of sense of anticlimax on the other end of the phone on that one. I thought that was one of my best Mystery Hour answers ever. It's that blimey modesty again. Ingrid is in Ottershaw. Ingrid, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on, Ingrid.
Do bees fart?
How old are you, Ingrid?
10.
No, how old are you really?
Ballpark. Older than 10.
I don't want to be ungalactic. I just saw that, because I get a little tiny clue on my screen.
I'm older than you.
Yes, I get a tiny clue on my screen as to the direction in which a caller is going to go. In a Mystery Hour, it's more...
Hello?
No, I'm here. I just presumed that that question was coming from a child.
Well, you did say that the questions from the adults didn't seem to be as intelligent as from the children. I thought I could get away with that.
No, well, you've snuck in. Do bees break wind? I might just slightly euphemistically... What do they eat? Well, I don't actually know is the short answer. We'd have to find out. Why do you want to know?
It's something I've been wondering for years, I hate to say.
No, I mean, why wouldn't you? Once it's in your head, you're going to struggle to get it out again. So we'll find out for you. Do bees break wind? 0345 6060973. Dara is in County Clare. Dara, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
It's regarding the mobile phones, why you have to hit the send button.
Yes.
It's to conserve your battery. Because a mobile works is, every so often, it connects to the network to tell the network where it is. Because if it was continuously connected to the network, it would drain your battery. That's why if you're out in the country and you've got no mobile signal, your battery goes down really quickly because the phone's constantly trying to connect to the network.
So the base is the point here, because it's connected to the electricity supply.
Yeah, it's like when you used to get a power outage. Your phone line would still work, but the rest of the power would be out because the power is a different power source.
Yeah.
And it's generally always on. So as soon as you lift up your handset, it connects straight away. If you were to do it with a mobile, your battery wouldn't last 2 minutes. Well, probably last maybe an hour or something. But it's like being on a phone call if you keep it connected. So you may have happened yourself, if you're up the lakes and your battery was full, and you went hiking in the hills, and then you went to make a phone call, but your battery was dead because the phone was trying to connect to the network to tell it where it was. Because it does it every so often. It's like if you're ever in your car listening to the radio, and it makes a funny signal, a funny noise to your radio, that's your phone telling the network where it is.
Oh, of course it is. And, the click, click, click noise type thing.
Yeah, and if it doesn't get a reply back from the network, the phone constantly goes, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. And they use the same power as the phone call and killed your battery.
Qualifications?
Worked with mobile since the 90s.
So it's all to do with the electricity supply, nothing to do with the telecommunication side of things. I mean, it wouldn't make much sense to have a constantly open line in your pocket, because, as I said, you'd be dialing people by accident left, right and centre. But that's not the answer. That's just an attendant issue. The basic answer is that your power supply kicks in every time you open up a phone line. But there you go. Round of applause for... Is it Dara or Dara?
Dara.
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 Dara. I'm glad we had this chat, Dara. Give him another round of applause. Give him another round of applause.
Hey!
Thank you, Dara. It is 12:43. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Need a few more answers to these questions. I shall run you through the ones remaining in a moment. But before that, we go to Ipsum. Rhea is in Ipsum. Rhea, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
So it's for the clapping and the blinking question.
Yes.
I experimented with my dad.
Pardon?
And,
what did you do to him?
So he clapped and I didn't blink because I was ready. So the answer is you don't blink when someone else claps. It's all about being ready for
yes,
it.
Yes, being
not.
Expected. And a baby, the younger you are, that's why the baby can still tickle himself, isn't it? Because he doesn't yet understand what's going on. And his brain doesn't send a message to his skin almost saying, don't get ticklish. There's a toothbrush heading your way. And the clap, so the older you are, the easier it would be to actually train yourself not to blink when someone claps.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't believe you did an actual experiment while I was on the radio, Ria. Do you do many other? You should do some other experiments on your dad as well. Have you got any? I mean, have you got any electrodes in the house or something like that? Or we could wire him up to something and see. Have you got a lie detector that gives little electric shocks or something? We could do it live on the radio if you want. Might be quite fun.
I don't think so.
What? I didn't. No. Well, never mind. I say to you, what are your qualifications? And you say science, James. Are you ready? So what are your qualifications, Ria?
I did an experiment.
You're a star. Have a round of applause on me. Lovely stuff. There you go. And thank you, Dad, as well, for playing your part in this experiment. 12:45 is the time.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:48 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we still need answers to questions about the five-day week, about whether bees suffer from flatulence. Who was the first teacher? Coordinates, how accurate are they? That was a silly question, although I am guilty of not realising in time. Who decided which way round knives and forks go when you lay or set the table? There's a few other there as well. The origin of the five-day week and the cost of a £20 note. It's highly unlikely we're going to clear this board before 1 o'clock. So if you can we get rid of some of the questions that are waiting? And if you can answer any of the ones I've just asked, then book your place now. Rowan is in Southend. Rowan, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on, Rowan.
Okay, so your coordinates, how accurate are they?
Yes.
It depends on the number of decimal places.
Yes.
So if you have a latitude and longitude of, say, 0 degrees, 0.01, and 54.2, it will get you to a particularly general area, but the further down you get into the decimal places, the more accurate you're going to get.
Yeah. This was the bit we missed. Me and was it Ben who asked the question? I think we just presumed it was an integer, and that's it. It was Tom. And so the answer is, it can be as accurate as you want it to be. It can be infinitely accurate. You could almost get a coordinate down to a grain of sand if you used enough decimal places.
Yes, it's degrees, hours, minutes, seconds. Milliseconds and so on and so forth. So the greater number of decimal places you have, the more accurate it is. To give you some example, if you want to get to somebody's front door, it's 8 decimal places.
Okay. Oh, wow. And if you wanted to get to the doorknob, it'd be 18 or 80 decimal places.
Yeah.
That's just superb. Qualifications?
I'm a data analyst, and I've just completed a project on geography with properties, so I can actually find your front door.
That's just fantastic. A round of applause for Rowan, please. I love that. What a brilliant answer as well. Ned is in... Oh, gosh. Is that Cleobury Mortimer?
It is indeed, yeah. Good morning.
A delightful part of the world, just down...
Absolutely.
Just up the road from my mum's. Question or answer, Ned?
I can tell you the answer is an answer to the one about telecoms.
Carry on.
And also there's a bit of a black cloud going down towards your mum's way.
Oh, I'll tell her. I shall alert. Well, she'll be listening. So look out, mum. Seriously, bring the washing in.
That's it. There's two answers, really. One is analogue and one is digital. Two different systems. Now, the analogue system, you pick the phone up with a landline, and that engages a thing called a strowager.
Right.
Unit.
Yes.
And that basically looks like a comb. So if you imagine running your finger along the comb and you dial 9, you go 9 teeth down the comb and stop.
Yeah.
And then you dial the second
digit,
9.
Yeah.
So it goes
you can hear
the
it.
Next hour.
Well, you used to be able to hear it, didn't you?
That's right. It goes click, 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 click. And similarly, so if you dial 999, it's 3 lots of strowager gear. And then that connects you through to that number that way. On digital systems, you put the number in first, and the phone stores it, and this is the same for the decked phones you use on cordless lines. And then basically what happens is it holds the number, then gets the line for you, and then pumps it down the line.
Yes. So I don't think the last answer was wrong, but yours is an embellishment of the last answer.
Yeah, it's just I spent a bit of my time pulling pins out of Strager gear.
Ah, so that solves my next mystery, which is, what are your qualifications, Ned?
Well, I used to work in World Service.
Oh, fantastic. Round of applause for Ned, please. Don't go away, Ned. Now, I'm going to do the most in-joke that has ever been done on British radio with you now.
It's not about the way I walk, is it?
No, it's not about the way you walk. Isn't there a village just up the road from you that I, in my childhood, used to refer to as crushed biscuits?
Crushed biscuits?
Crushed biscuits.
Crushed biscuit. I can't remember that.
Hopped on wafers.
Oh, right, fine, yes.
Can you at least pretend to be mildly amused, Ned?
Oh, goodness, that's interesting.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, when we were little, we always called Hopped on Wafers crushed biscuits as we went through it in the car. And there was a rather good restaurant there that ended up being run by an old boss of mine who used to have the Brasserie in Kidderminster. I can't remember what the name of the restaurant in Hopped on Wafers was.
I think it's long gone now.
I think. Anyway, we digress. Ned, thank you very much indeed. A beautiful part of the world. Actually, Ned, before you go, tell my listeners about the relationship between Cleobury Mortimer and the Olympic Games, if you would.
It's all in Shropshire, and Cleobury Mortimer was one of the places, I think, where they did some tryouts, probably for the first Olympic Games in 1904, which started in Much Wedlock.
That's it, exactly, just up the road in Much Wedlock. The origin of the modern Olympic movement in a small corner of Shropshire. You live and learn. Emily is in Maidstone. Emily, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Emily. What is it?
Why do we call size a lap when sitting, but not when we are standing?
What a brilliant question. How long have you been wondering about that?
My daddy has.
I love that question. So when you're standing up, it's our thighs. When you're sitting down, it's our lap, isn't it? It's still our thighs, but it's a lap. I shall try and find out for you, Emily, but I haven't got much time left. Will you be very, very cross with me if I don't get an answer?
Yes.
Oh, that's not the answer. Well, we better hurry up then quickly. I don't want Emily to get cross with me. That'd be awful. What an awful way to spend Thursday with Emily being cross with you. Come on. Why is it called a lap? The flat area between the waist and the knees of a seated person, but categorically not a standing person. Hussein is in Barking. Hussein, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
What happens to the clouds when it's sunny and where do they go?
What happens to the clouds when it's sunny?
And where do they go?
Okay, do you have a kettle at home?
Yes.
So, you know when all the steam comes out of the kettle?
Yeah.
And then it stops coming out of the kettle?
Yeah.
Where does it go?
In the sky.
Well, not really. It's just that it gets a bit hotter so that the steam develops when it's hotter, and then when it cools down, it turns into water. So the clouds, when they get colder, they turn into rain and they'll fall out of the sky and the cloud will disappear. And when it gets hotter... Oh, where do the clouds go when it's sunny?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that is... I'm going to have to try and find out for you. I've only got 4 minutes left. We're pushing it very close today, Hussein. Let's try. Where do the clouds go when it is sun? Well, they heat up even more, don't they? Or does that sound silly? I don't know. Ray is in Colchester. Ray, question or answer?
Answer to the 5-day working week.
Quick as you can, Ray.
Sundays were tended not to be used anyway for working in mills, etc., because it was considered to be a religious day.
Right.
So that left you... So the average working time during the Victorian period was around 60 to 80 hours a week, if not more.
Blimey.
The Factory Acts gradually reduced this by protecting particular things, particular people groups like children and women.
Yes.
And you had various strikes in the 1880s by gas workers who said, shorten our day to lengthen our life.
Yes.
But it wasn't until just after World War II
that
a lot of firms stopped working 5.5 days.
Wow.
And got rid of the Saturday morning, and then you have Monday to Friday.
And the trade unions would have played a very big part
in
it.
Yeah, they played a huge part, a massive part in it. Massive.
So if it wasn't for the trade unions, we'd still be working 5.5 days a week. Yeah,
yeah,
but, you know, down with them anyway, because, I don't know, something in the sun.
And one of those awful officials as well.
Yeah, precisely that. And the health and safety as well, down with that too. We should all be working
Absolutely.
6 days a week in factories where we routinely lose our arms, because that's
it.
Qualifications, right?
Notionally, I'm a science teacher from Colchester, but I also like history.
That'll do nicely. Round of applause for Ray. Great answer. Lots there. Where are we going to go next? Joss is in Falkirk. Joss, question or answer?
It's an answer, mate.
Carry on, Joss. Let's do it.
Bees farting. Yes,
well,
they
can
do.
Can we say no breaking wind, Joss, please?
Oh, sorry. Breaking wind. Yeah. Flatulating.
Flatulating. That's not a word, is it? It should be. It is. It is now.
It is now.
It is now. How do you know? What are your qualifications?
My mother was a beekeeper.
That doesn't necessarily mean that you can definitively state that bees break wind.
Well, it's a possibility they do because of
they must
getting caught within the fecal matter, apparently.
Well, they must also have an exhaust, mustn't they? I mean, that's fundamentally what it is.
Yeah.
It is. It's an exhaust that after the chemical reactions of digestion have occurred. Do you think they fly faster when they let one go?
Well, I don't know about that, but they probably smell sweeter.
Sugar puffs. Round of applause for Joss.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. I stole that joke. Someone texted it in ages ago, and I didn't understand why, and I suddenly realised it's about the bees. Livy's in Ipswich. Livy, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
So it's for the eating right and left-handed one?
Yes.
So you're right, it is because knives came first.
Fantastic.
So they were used in the right hand because most people are right-handed.
Yes.
And the reason that a lot of children eat left-handed is because they sit opposite their parents, so they mirror what they do.
Not in Ada's house, because her dad eats with the wrong one, with it the wrong way round as well. So maybe she sits opposite her mum all the time.
Yeah, maybe, because people often sit in the same places when they're growing up, don't they? Everyone has their own seat.
They do. So I love that. So it was simply the fact that the knife was the only implement for a long time, and then when the fork was introduced, you left your knife in the hand that it had been in all along.
Yeah, exactly.
Qualifications?
I also am right-handed and also eat left-handed, and I looked up years ago when I was a child.
Oh, that's fascinating. A round of applause for Livy.
Thank you.
And that one is for Ada, who you won, Ada. You'll tell your mum to get over it. Nick's in Brighton. Last one, probably. Question or answer, Nick?
Answer, mate.
Carry on.
What are parallel universes and do they exist?
Yeah.
They're part of a theory based on weak gravitational fields. Some people think that there could be 12 parallel universes and the combined actuality of that creates a reality that shares an overall gravity, but that's probably just fanciful nonsense.
Right.
Nature's a lot simpler than that. If you have to invent things, it's not right.
It's not that.
But as far as it's also believed that they're obviously like sliding doors moments, a slice in time.
Yes.
So if you were to fractionalize time and allocate it, if you had made a certain decision, it would go off that way. And somewhere in the world, you know, in the universe, there's a parallel universe where I went and I married that person. But that doesn't exist. It was only ever a potential until you have what would be considered a collapse of a waveform. So
mate, the person who asked this question was 10 years old.
Yeah, it's not going to get any easier.
It wasn't Ada. Ada asked the knife and fork question, didn't she? Have I got that mixed up?
Yeah, that was brilliant, the mirroring thing.
That,
brilliant.
Wasn't that absolutely fascinating? But your answer's brilliant as well. What are your qualifications?
I am an avid studier of everything from heliophysics, solid dynamics, to plasma cosmology, etc., etc. Anything to do with the latest peer reviewed science.
That's great work. Round of applause for Nick. And that question was asked by Amy. Not and Ada was the knife and fire, so I haven't completely lost. And that is it now for go crikey, I'm already a bit late. We'll do it all again tomorrow morning from 10. The next voice you will hear belongs to Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you, James. From 3, Shamima Begum joined Islamic State at the age of 15, left London, had 3 children, all of whom died. Then she emerged back into the light when Raqqa fell to Iraqi and Kurdish forces. She wanted understanding shown to her, but she didn't get very much, did she? Today, she learns she can return to the UK to try to get her citizenship back. Should she? At 2, an employment lawyer is here to take your jobs questions as the spectre of unemployment begins to bear down. Get your calls in on 0345 6060 973. We'll give you the jobs picture straight up after the news, but how prepared are you for what's coming?
On your radio, on Global Player, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.